And we were just so happy. She was able to share that moment with me of, yes, you're reading what you're reading, that this is it. You did it. You did it, Mom. You found the answer for him. So, pretty cool.
Genetics isn't always black and white, and the emotions and decisions surrounding genetics and genetic testing can be even more complex. Welcome to Patient Stories with Gray Genetics. I'm Eleanor Griffith, certified genetic counselor and the founder of Gray Genetics, an independent telehealth genetic counseling and consulting service. It seems like there are constantly headlines in the news about genetics, but few news stories focus on the patient experience. At Gray Genetics, we are collecting patient stories, your stories. Every other Tuesday, we bring you a patient story related to genetics. If you'd like to share your story, send an email to podcast@graygenetics.com.
That it's a scary diagnosis, and it's one that, you know, we didn't want, and you know, nobody ever wishes these diagnoses on their children.
Molly D'Angelo is a wife and mother to three children, including her youngest son, Joshua, who was diagnosed with Bardet-Biedl syndrome in June of 2020, just before he turned 6 years old. Joshua was 7 years old when we recorded this interview. So Molly, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. You're one of the first resources that I found early in my journey. So it's really a pleasure to meet you and chat with you, and just thank you so much.
Oh, interesting. Is that the Patient Stories podcast specifically?
It is, yes.
Oh, how did I don't know if I've actually heard that before from a guest. I'm curious how you came across it. And I know I haven't interviewed a parent before who has a child with Bardet-Biedl syndrome like you do. So I'm curious kind of like how it resonated with you, or if you listen to other rare disease episodes.
I'm a little bit of a Hermione Granger in the sense of when I dive into something, I really dive in, and I love researching things. I was a biology major for a short period of time before getting married, and the topics are very interesting to me, but more importantly, the why and where things come from. So, and we'll talk about this in a bit, but because Josh was undiagnosed for so long of his life so far, I was really in a no man's land, alone on an island, if you say. So, searching things and researching things, just trying to find answers. I was really trying to go towards like medical driven content. So I think I just searched genetics, something along those lines in the podcast search bar, and your podcast and one other had come up. So I just began listening to stories, and it really helped motivate me hearing from other families of what they went through and what steps they took and all of the things. So it was very, very inspiring to me and helpful in our journey.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'm sure other parents will feel similarly listening to you share your story. So your son, Josh, as you alluded to, has a condition called Bardet-Biedl syndrome. Am I saying it correctly?
You are. I don't think I always say it properly. I think you said it better. Bardet-Biedl is how it's most commonly pronounced. Bardet-Biedl is also something that somebody, you know, some people say. So yeah, it's very, very rare, and it's not a name that many people have heard.
Right. So what does that diagnosis mean for him? And when did you finally receive that diagnosis? It sounds like you spent a long time without really an answer as to what was going on.
Yeah. So there's certain criteria that Bardet-Biedl has. He has enough that categorize him as a diagnosis, but he does not have all of the primary characteristics. So the primary characteristics of Bardet-Biedl is retinal dysfunction, obesity, reduced kidney function and specifically a certain look to the kidneys. Polydactyly, which is an extra digit on the hands and or feet, and some other features. He has some of those. He does not have an extra digit. And we may be seeing some retinal sensitivity, but not categorized as dysfunction at this time. But Joshua has the obesity, and he's just kind of large statured, which is what immediately brought me to wondering what was going on with him. Mm-hmm. But he's just overgrowth. But he's categorized as obese. He also has some learning disabilities. He has the kidney dysfunction. He has some thyroid issues, as well as some other things that fall into the secondary characteristics of Bardet-Biedl.
Yeah, and it sounds like some of those characteristics you mentioned, like having an extra digit, would have made it apparent from birth or possibly even before that there was something different or like possible like bigger medical issue going on with him. Was it just kind of like gradually you realized there were these issues that kind of unfolded, or did you have any clues when you were pregnant or when he was born that something wasn't just like typical development, completely healthy?
So that's a really good point, because those that are born with the extra digit, it is very apparent, and then it kicks the pediatricians into, okay, something genetic must have caused that. With Josh, he was a very, very fussy child. We have two older children, but they are half brothers. So although there are babies, all three live with us full time, and we're just a big family. Genetics wise, they have different genetics to them. So with Josh, when he was born, he was so fussy, and we just knew, you know, we both had colicky babies previously. We raised two kids. It was different. But then more importantly, it was the overgrowth. So every time we were going in for our 1 month, 2 month checkups, his growth charts were almost unchartable. They were peaking so quickly that it was off of a standardized chart. And that, I think, piqued the not necessarily concerns at that point, but the pediatricians were looking at that as, oh, that's odd. Well, let's just wait and see what's going on, because there is nothing blatantly obvious here yet. Mm-hmm. But our instincts, mine and my husband's, just told us that something was going on with him. We had suspected things basically right from the moment he was born. And I think some of those fall into the autism categoristic, category of his oversensitivity to the things that were going on around him. Mm-hmm. But physically, he was growing at such a rapid rate that he was probably very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So those were the first things that we noticed. Just, we could never set him down, and he was just an unhappy baby.
Yeah. And then as he became a little older and like a toddler, was it similar with him just like growing really quickly and you noticing like more differences between him and your previous children?
By the time he was 10 to 12 months old, and again, you know, being a little bit of a research-minded, you know, person of wanting to find answers and knowing something was going on, I didn't want to just wait and see. So by the time he was 10 to 12 months old, I kind of had the pediatrician going, okay, yeah, mom. Okay, yeah, I can see. There's got to be something else going on here. So before we were considering him a toddler, we were recognizing that he wasn't meeting milestones. That chart of growth was dramatically increasing every single time. So we were sent to endocrinology first, which makes sense to look for any diabetic kind of insulin kind of circumstances or thyroid disease or, you know, any of those kinds of hormonal and imbalances. So we were sent there first before genetics. Mm-hmm. And around the same time, we were also sent over to the local ISD school district to evaluate for autism and delays. That all happened really quickly and happened all around the same time. So it's all kind of a blur, but he had lots of tests done and we were seeing lots of specialists really, really quickly around that 12-month mark.
Yeah, and then he didn't actually receive a diagnosis until he was 5, right?
Right. So we seeked an answer for a very long time. In my opinion, 5 years is a very long time to continue seeking, and it was a draining process, but I'm so glad that I stuck with it, and I'm so glad that through resources and researching and trying to connect with people online, we were so blessed to have made some contacts that wanted to help us and wanted to find out what was going on with Josh. So we were actually gifted a trip to Wisconsin. We live in Michigan. Mm-hmm. And we were able to go to Wisconsin for a full clinical trial. It was a 4-day process. I think I tracked it at 19 different appointments in those 4 days.
Yeah.
It was during some of the travel restriction times, and we didn't really want to fly, so we had driven the 8 hours to get there. So we were exhausted, but it was such a gratifying trip, and we didn't leave with a diagnosis, but we left really feeling like these are our people. And they really, really understand us. This doctor knows our boy and knows what, you know, he has a pretty good idea of what's going on here. And if it's not Barty Beetle, he's going to help us. And that was in April of 2020. And we ended up receiving a diagnosis in the mail, a letter from that doctor in June of 2020. And then, yeah, his birthday is in July. So he turned 6 1 month after being diagnosed.
Yeah. I'm curious.
Pretty cool birthday present.
Yeah. I'm curious, what was your experience like when you were referred to genetics the first time?
Basically, this particular geneticist said, we're going to have to refer you somewhere else.
I'm a bit surprised he didn't at least talk to you about the option of ordering whole exome sequencing, which I would think by that time would have been a possibility for a scenario like yours. You know, of course, it depends on insurance and specifics, but with those first tests negative.
So I think his hospital wasn't doing that. So I was sent to him first, and that was at the 12-month mark. So I hadn't dived in deep, right? I didn't go down the rabbit hole yet. My mother seeking answers yet. I didn't even know to ask for some things. But I I remember very blatantly feeling frustrated. Like, this was kind of a waste of time. But where do we go from here? And, you know, just sad and frustrated. After that, we went to probably 4 other geneticists before going out of state.
Huh. And none of them tried to order whole exome sequencing for him?
So they did. We had traveled to Cincinnati Children's Hospital, who did a full exome sequencing. They were doing a big case study. So they said, if you come down here, your insurance won't cover anything in the state, but if you come down here, we'll perform the full exome sequencing. They had an endocrinologist there that specialized in Prader-Willi. And although we didn't, you know, Josh doesn't have Prader-Willi, and we had tested for it and it came back negative, my line of thinking at that point in my research as a parent was, whatever Josh has, it looks kind of similar to this. So I want to talk to anybody that has any clue and has seen anybody that looks a little bit like Josh. So we went down there and we had 2 appointments, one with her nutritionist and one with the endocrinologist there. And they were lovely. And then they did the full exome sequencing. This full exome sequencing did pull up something that is related to Birdy Beetle, but it appears like he's a carrier of it, that it's not an active gene, which I still find very bizarre, but I am not a geneticist, so I don't know much about that. But it's been one thing after another.
I don't have expertise in Bardet beetle specifically, but just like looking quickly before I talk to you, it's the kind of, you know, condition we usually learn a tiny bit about in grad school and like, you know, might have a question on our boards exam. But it kind of fits into a category of conditions that can be trickier to diagnose because it's usually autosomal recessive, but it's not like there's just one gene where it's like, okay, we just look at this gene. Like there's a lot of different genes, and then sometimes with autosomal recessive conditions and then kind of compounded when more genes are involved, there might be some variants that we know are related to the disease, but then there can be like surprise ones where it just becomes harder to interpret those results sometimes.
That's how I understand it too. I believe they're up to 20 genes, but there's so much research going on right now that it seems like there's more and more being classified as genes that can be classified as Birdy beetle. Every year, it seems like there is more genes being recognized by the medical community. So that's an awesome thing and an awesome time to be involved.
Yeah. So when you finally got that diagnosis through the doctors you saw in Wisconsin, did you receive that in person, or you'd started to say you received a letter? Did you receive it through a letter in the mail? The diagnosis.
Yeah. So the last day of our trip, we had an appointment. Just kind of setting the picture of the answer with the leading specialist in the country. And we left there feeling like he's not going to get diagnosed. You know, he doesn't feel like Josh is necessarily fitting all of the criteria for a clinical diagnosis. But we, again, felt really, really reassured that we were in the right place. And it's possible that Josh has Birdy beetle. And that diagnosis makes the most sense out of all of the rare genetic disorders of obesity. But maybe he's one of those genes that hasn't been found yet or looks possibly slightly different than cases that they've seen before. So when we got the letter in the mail in June, I literally was in disbelief. I opened it and I read it and I read it again. And I just couldn't believe my eyes. I was very much preparing myself for, that's okay, we're going to continue seeking, but they're the people that will help us. So I actually faxed it to his current pediatrician, who's amazing. And she called me right away, and we were just so happy. She was able to share that moment with me of, yes, you're reading what you're reading, that this is it. You did it. You did it, Mom. You found the answer for him. So,
yeah,
pretty cool.
And I think for people who aren't in the rare disease community or don't have a child with special needs, it can be like odd to think of receiving a diagnosis as something that's positive. You know, like so often people's association or experience is like learning something negative for the first time. Whereas for you, this is something you knew he had a condition, but you didn't know the name. Does that feel correct?
It is. And it's something that I really try to communicate in an open and transparent way when I'm talking to other parents, because I think, and I know from talking to other parents that it is a scary thing, that it's almost better not knowing for some individuals. But I try to express that my feelings were, and I hope that other people will feel the same way, through seeing getting a diagnosis means that we can get our children help. It's a scary thing. You're going to grieve. You're going to get choked up when you're even talking about it. And that's going to be lifelong with your baby. But an autism diagnosis, for example, means that you can go get therapies and intervention, early intervention, or an IEP at school to help them. A medical diagnosis means that you can seek the specialists in that area, in that field, that will help their quality of life. And that's all we can ask for parent. As a parent, that should be our number one priority, is giving them the best quality of life possible.
When you were considering that, you know, there was at least a possibility that he might have Bardet-Biedl syndrome, did the doctors talk to you about what that would mean? Like, did it kind of paint a picture that was either better or worse than you might have otherwise thought in terms of his longer-term development and possibilities?
Yeah, and in truth, you know, because we did a lot of research, or I did a lot of research and then dragged my poor husband for the ride, I remember him blatantly saying, I hope it's not that, when we were in the research and I was showing him the different diagnosis possibilities. Because there is kidney malfunction, and because there is retinal dysfunction that can lead to partial, if not complete, blindness, that it's a scary diagnosis. And it's one that, you know, we didn't want. And, you know, nobody ever wishes these diagnoses on their children. So by the time when we got to the specialist office a state over, we knew a lot of those things, and they were able to kind of communicate with us about some research that is being done, things that we can help, things that we can do, you know, to help. For example, Josh's kidneys have a certain malfunctional look to them. They look like BBS kidneys, and those in the field will understand what that means, but his blood tests, his normal checks are normal at this time, meaning they're functioning fairly properly despite the dysfunction that they have. So one of the things that we were doing without even knowing that the kidney specialist told us to continue doing for as long as possible is we allow him to drink water 24/7. We were doing it because it's zero calories. There's no harm in drinking water. And he has hypophagia, which means he's hungry all the time. So putting something into his belly is helping his brain feel like he's full. So he's drinking this water all day, every day. What that's doing is it's flushing the liver and the kidneys constantly. He was diagnosed with liver disease as well, fatty liver. Early on, and his numbers were abnormal. They're now normal, and the doctors are mostly contributing that to the water that he's drinking and doing the right things.
That's great. Is that something he likes to do anyways, drink a lot of water? Is it a struggle to get him to drink?
Oh, no, he just gulps it all day. It was a struggle to switch from, like, the formula to the water in toddler ages. But since then, the only thing he drinks is water. He doesn't drink juice. He doesn't drink Gatorade. He doesn't drink anything other than water. So he just carries it all day, every day, and he drinks a lot of it. But it seems to be helping a lot.
Yeah. I think you mentioned, or the person who initially reached out to me about this interview mentioned the obesity specifically, and that's just such can be so stigmatizing. Tell me a little bit about his weight and how that affects you and your family, and how the kind of I guess how that is, like, interacting with people, or like comments you get, or how you feel that's judged as you go out.
Well, I'll say I didn't mind this pandemic world that we've lived in for a while that much, because we were kind of hermited. And the reason for that is because we live in a very judgmental society. unfortunately. And I hope that we can spread some education and some knowledge and help change that a little bit. But having a large baby, toddler, and now 6-year-old, it gets a lot of attention. And sometimes it's just looking, sometimes it's gawking, and sometimes it's whispering, and sometimes it's saying very unkind things out loud to you. And I, through some of my self-care and some of my healing process as a parent with a child with special needs, I've had to do for myself, I have been able to luckily get to a point where I just try to educate and stay calm in those situations without giving our life story, but giving a little blurb of, you know, actually there's medical conditions that cause these things. Like we really have to think about the words that are coming out of our mouth before they come out of our mouth, because there's people on the receiving end and you don't know what they're going through and what they're living through and what could be causing it. It's tough.
Did when he, after he got the diagnosis, did Bardet beetle become a part of the answer, whereas before it was like you were more describing that he had medical issues? I'm wondering if that shift helped, or if it's just, you know, a rare disease that no one's heard of with someone who shouldn't be making comments in the first place. And it's just equally as frustrating with or without the diagnosis.
Totally. 100%. You hit the nail on the head, which is another reason why having a diagnosis was like a weight lifting off of us a little bit. Like now we know why, right? We know the cause. We know we didn't have anything to do with it. We know I was counting, counting calories for this kiddo, you know, to justify how much he was eating, to show doctors like he's not overeating. But yeah, with people, for sure, it's like, oh, he has a medical condition. You know, and now it's like, no, we have a name to it. So I can say, oh, he has Bardet Beetle syndrome, you know, Google it. but I mean, it's just, and even with doctor's offices, not just normal, ordinary people, but in doctor's offices, try explaining to a medical biller why the only billing code on your insurance form is obesity. You know, that now he has an actual disorder and they go, oh, okay, this is the reason why they need X, Y, or Z medical equipment, medications, whatever. But before it was like, explain to us why your child needs this because he's larger. Right. It was a very challenging thing.
And I would guess that with childhood obesity being such a public health concern, that you can kind of get lumped in, of course, with other people who have children with those issues, where it really could be, you know, maybe somewhat genetic, but also issues related to nutrition and things where parents actually could make a difference. Did you see that in seeing specialists where they're just assuming this must be related to what you're feeding him?
On Friday, he had a broken ankle for 12 weeks ago, sorry, 12 weeks ago, he broke his ankle and we had a follow-up with orthopedics on Friday, to have, you know, fresh x-rays done. Yep. It's healed very well. Keep doing what you're doing, do physical therapy. And we had a student, come in before the doctor as they do and go over some things before calling the doctor in. And, she said, oh, so I see that he has BNB. You know, diet and exercise, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, what approach do I want to take today? You know, cause sometimes you just are like, okay, yep, thank you very much. But other days you want to educate and say, you know, I appreciate your, looking at the chart and trying to do, you know, some research. I really, really appreciate that. We refer to it as, BBS, Bardet Beetle. And yes, diet and exercise are very important. However, you know, there's so much more going on with this disorder. So I'm educating health professionals that are trying to educate me on how to help him. But the concept of your brain and the metabolism and the body not functioning is a very complex concept to explain. So a lot of the time you just want to say, yeah, yes, I know, diet and exercise. Thank you very much. I appreciate your input.
Yeah, when you do feel up to educating people, whether it's healthcare providers or others, how does that usually go over? And I mean, you've had lots of practice now. I'm sure you've had a range of reactions.
A range of reactions. Most of the time, though, I feel like now I'm to the point where the confidence level is there and the anxiety is down. You know, once upon a time, I felt so anxious and I felt like I was being judged and that they thought I was a bad mom and I was being judged and those things. And that was really tough. Removing the anxiety and removing the personal, you know, connection to those statements has allowed me to approach them with logic and kindness and patience. So your delivery really matters when talking to people. And I've certainly been human and not done the best delivery at some times. But for the most part, when I've just tried to explain things, I've gotten oftentimes parents know a lot more than the medical community when it's so rare. And when a majority of your doctors have never seen an individual with this diagnosis, some don't necessarily have the time because they work so many hours in a day and they have so many patients in a day. But a majority of the time, I'm starting to find that they're genuinely interested now that he has a diagnosis. Before he had a diagnosis, it was skepticism in the eyes of every medical professional, in my opinion. And maybe that was just me being self-conscious and, you know, still in that state of wanting a discovery. But now it's more of a, okay, tell me about that, which is lovely. And I appreciate it very much.
Yeah. So now Josh is 6 years old. He'll be seven in July, right? So probably seven by the time this goes out. To what extent is his life sort of like a typical six-year-old, and to what extent is it different? Of course, with COVID, no six-year-old has a really typical life or has had a typical past 2 years.
That's true. Life is very different right now than when my older two, because I have an 18 and a 13-year-old, they're both boys. And I think back, you know, because my middle's the closest to it, I worked at the school when he was in kindergarten. So that was lovely being able to see him every day and be there. Josh's life is completely different. He has global delays, developmental delays, learning disabilities, and autism. So developmentally, he's more like 4 years old. Each category, he scores differently in different categories, but if we were to round him out, it would be about a 4-year-old level. Physically, everything is different, from the kind of pants that you buy to shoes to, you know, all the clothing that you purchase for him is different. But then just simple activities like getting in and out of the van, you know, a typical six-year-old would just hop into the van. And with Josh, it's we have a jazzercise step that's a nice wide, large plastic lightweight step but very sturdy. He steps onto that and then into the van, and then I have a 5-point harness because car seats are not typical for him, so we have a different medical harness for him in the chair.
And is that because he's beyond the weight and or height limits of
right seats? So he's 56 inches tall, which is only maybe 5 inches shorter than my 13-year-old before his latest growth spurt. He's he shot up a couple inches recently, but they were, we had family photos done and they were only like 5 inches apart from each other.
Mm-hmm. I feel like just for taller kids in general, who are young, when you're taller, sometimes people expect more of you and expect you to act older than you really are. Do you run into that, or is it apparent to people that he has other issues going on because of the obesity and delays in autism?
I think it's more noticeable now for people that see us out and about than it was when he was younger. When he was in a stroller age, I think people had a harder time of identifying that. But now his verbal skills are so disconnected from his physical stature that maybe it's more noticeable now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I know you mentioned Josh has two older siblings. So one on your side and one on his father's side. Is that right? Like 18 and 13?
Right. The 18-year-old is my son, my birth baby. And then his our middle is his birth baby. But we've raised them both.
And at those ages, they must remember, you know, when you were pregnant, when he was born, kind of like the whole, his whole time growing up so far. I'm curious what their relationship is like with him and how this has impacted them.
So there's big age groups between my kids, which can cause a divider between, I think, children, generally. Between 18 and 13, they played, you know, up until a certain point together, and now they kind of do their own things. And same with the difference between a 13 and a 6-year-old. But given the developmental difference, too, there's more of a divider there. So I kind of have the teenagers, and then I have the toddler, you know, young guy. But they, I think during the early stages, to be completely honest, they're amazing kids and they're incredible with him, but I think it's been very hard on them that we have had such a long time frame of seeking a diagnosis for their baby brother, and that baby brother isn't always happy, you know, that he has some times where the whole house affects, you know, is affected by his mood and what he's going through. He's sick very often, or he's going through things very often, and that affects everyone. But I firmly believe that through, and I'm going to cry again, I'm going to try not to, I firmly believe that all of our life's trials, tribulations, and blessings are given to each one of us for a reason, to develop us into the people that we're meant to become. So that's very much how I feel for my older two children. They have gone through tremendous things in their life with their baby brother and other things in their life. But they're turning into fine men that care about others and whoever they're meant to be because of all of this.
I had one last question on here, two last questions, but has Joshua's condition affected how you think about having other children? I know this was you already have kids who are older, so I'm not sure if before this you'd planned on having multiple children with your current partner, or just how you've thought about that.
Yeah, so we've been married 8 years. We've been together for 10 years, and we will not have additional children. But I can say it, beyond that scope of having additional children, it certainly develops all of your future. I can only speak for us. For us, Joshua has certainly is the huge aspect on which we plan our future from this point out. So our 5-year, 10-year, and continued plan is basically revolved around, you know, him and making sure our children, our older two, go off to do whatever they are planned to do and want to do and make them happy to do in life. But where we end up as far as like you know, our forever home, so to speak, will be accommodating Josh and his needs.
Yeah. And before you'd met Joshua, did you have any experience with rare disease or children with disabilities or special needs?
No, I joke about it a little bit. Not joke about it, but I did kind of joke about it a little bit with my brother's ex-girlfriend worked with adult adolescents with autism, and she's amazing. I still am in constant contact with her, and she's just an incredible human being. And I had joked one day, I don't have what you have. God gave you a set of skills that I don't have. And she said something along the lines of, you know, we all have the gifts and skills that we were meant to have. And what I think what she meant by that was her brother has autism, therefore she developed those skills, and that's who she developed into. I didn't know 10 years ago that I would have the skills today that I have, or that my life would go in the direction that it has. But Josh has allowed that to happen.
Yeah. I recorded this interview with Molly back in May of 2022. Today, Joshua is 9 years old. We reached out to Molly before publishing this podcast episode, and she had this update for us. Josh started Imkivree shot treatment in May. He has lost 14 pounds since beginning the medication. We're feeling very fortunate to have a team of providers that are diligently guiding us through this challenging diagnosis and working together to give him a happy and healthy life. Patient Stories is an ad-free podcast and is unaffiliated with any genetic testing laboratories. We would like to keep it that way. To support the podcast with a donation, visit graygenetics.com/podcast/donate. If you would like to dig deeper into the professional issues raised by these patient stories, for $5 a month, you can join the Patient Stories Club. To sign up, look for the link in the podcast notes for this episode or visit graygenetics.com/podcast.
The information contained in this podcast does not constitute medical advice and is also not a substitute for genetic counseling. Neither Gray Genetics nor any of its guests makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast. Evaluation of an individual's personal and family health history is a crucial part of genetic counseling and any recommendation.